When it comes to the lean executive recruiting landscape, staying ahead means staying informed. Subscribing to the Stiles Associates email list gives you access to the latest compensation data, industry analysis, and career resources straight from their recruiting team. Plus, you'll receive hand-picked career opportunities from leading companies, whether you're seeking new challenges or just curious about the market. So head over to leanexecs.com and sign up to get on the Stiles Associates email list and transform the way you make strategic decisions for your company and your career. Thanks for listening. Did you know I can help your organization on this journey of cultivating a culture of learning and innovation? I can be a trainer, coach, and advisor on topics including psychological safety, problem solving, and continuous improvement. I can add value to your management team meetings by speaking and facilitating discussions on these important topics. To learn more, visit markgraben.com or email me, mark@markgraben.com. Let's improve together.
Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, this is Mark Graben. Welcome to episode 294 of the podcast. It is December 13th, 2017. Joining me today is Clay Linkus, an account leader and speaker with Studer Group. He is an accomplished cultural transformation and leadership expert who has synthesized lean and other improvement methods with Studer Group principles and practices. So today we'll talk about Clay's career and his purpose and motivations, both for working in healthcare and improving healthcare. We're both firm believers in the combination of Studer and lean practices, so we'll be discussing that as our main topic. I also want to say, in the interest of disclosures, that earlier this year, I became listed as a speaker through Studer Group in addition to my other work and roles. So I do have a working relationship with them, but I do so because I've long respected Quint Studer, the now retired founder of Studer Group, or he's retired from Studer Group and doing other things. But I really respect his work and the approach that Studer Group takes working out there in healthcare with their clients. They use the term partners. So when Clay talks about Studer Group partners, that's what we mean there. So I'm really excited about the conversation. I hope you enjoy it. And hopefully Clay and I and some of the other Studer Group folks will do some podcasts in 2018. Thanks for listening. Clay, welcome to the podcast. I'm Mark Graben, host of the podcast. You know, we're going to talk for maybe 30 or 40 minutes today. We're going to be discussing Lean, Studer Group, the connections and synergies in these approaches. So I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Mark, for having me. I appreciate it.
And I think it was appropriate. This is a well-known Studer Group technique. I tried to start here with an edit to acknowledge and introduce, even though you know who I am and we've met, and talk about the duration and the expectations and to thank you. So I really am pleased that we're going to have this chance to chat today.
Yeah, I'm excited too.
Yeah, I wanted, we're going to talk about, Studer Group methodologies and principles and connections to lean, of course, but let's start, talking about you and your career. I'm always curious, not just how people got introduced to lean. I think we'll come back to that. But I think for people in healthcare, there's this question of, passion and motivation. How did you get started in healthcare? I'm curious to hear your story and a little bit about your motivations.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that, Mark. And I think it's a great starting point. And it's something that I always want to hear from others as well, because I think, we have to figure out where people's passion does come from. Mine personally, when I was a child, I actually was diagnosed with epilepsy. And through my childhood and teenage years, I had a number of seizures that were pretty scary. And the worst one I ever had, I was actually married. We were expecting our first child. And I was driving by myself, but actually had a seizure and totaled my car in a single car accident. And I just remembered my thoughts during that time about how, I was scared that I was not going to be able to carry my children in my arms because I was afraid I might drop them if I had a seizure, or I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to drive them around if I had a seizure, you know. And so there was just all these, you know, concerns and fears about the future. And I share all that with you to say that, you know, my passion for healthcare is because it was around that time that I was able to really have some breakthroughs in my healthcare, and through the care that I was getting from some neurologists and other specialty teams. I'm proud to say that, you know, 15 years later, I've been seizure free for 15 years now. And because of the, you know, just amazing healthcare that I received. And so honestly, you know, what gets me up in the morning, what gives me a passion to really do what I do is to really give back to the industry that's given me so much, given my family so much. And it's just an opportunity for me just to share my gratitude and help give back to those folks that are making such a difference in the world. So thanks for asking. That's really where my passion comes from.
Yeah. And thanks for sharing that, because I mean, I think it's always, it's good to have the reminders of the positives. You know, when we focus on improving healthcare, I'm as guilty of as anybody of focusing on the waste, focusing on the problems. But you're right, there are a lot of amazing things that happen every day in healthcare.
Absolutely.
So where did that take you professionally then, into your career, into the UT, University of Tennessee Health System? Can you talk a little bit about that progression?
Yeah, sure. I actually have a pretty diverse, you know, career background. From an educational standpoint, I did an undergrad in exercise science, and never really used that degree. A lot of my colleagues and college peers, you know, they went into different healthcare fields like cardiac rehab, and some of them went to PT, and some of them went to be, you know, orthopedics. But I literally actually became a associate pastor for a number of years. That's probably a whole nother podcast for another time. We can talk about that. And then I, after about 4 or 5 years, found my way into a sales and marketing role for a startup firm. Did that for a number of years. And during all this time, I was married to my wife, who's a critical care nurse. And I just always remember being somewhat jealous of her, because I felt like that the work that she was doing each day, you know, just really was making an impact for people on a daily basis. And so I decided that I really wanted to do something that I really felt like was making an impact in the world. And so I actually went back to school, to do a MBA in healthcare administration. I figured that there probably wasn't a good need for me to be taking care of patients, but I love the idea of really making an impact in healthcare. And so I also knew that I probably needed to get some experience. And so I actually contacted the vice president that was over my wife's nursing service line, and just honestly asked her if, you know, kind of talk to her and share kind of my career goals. And she and I just really connected. Really hit it off. And she wound up offering me an internship to basically, you know, work with her while I was in school. And she honestly really catapulted my career. Her name's Teresa Levy. She's actually the chief administrative officer still at UT Medical Center in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I'm just so grateful for Teresa, because she really you know, really launched my career, offered me an opportunity to work on a lot of different projects that were really high profile. And it was during that time I also wound up finding myself being offered a full-time job at UT in their performance improvement department. And UT was beginning kind of their lean journey. They had decided to adopt kind of the Toyota production system, the Virginia Mason system, as part of their operating platform, and they really needed some subject matter experts to really help lead and guide that. And so they invested in me, sent me off for training and development. And really, that's where I got started. I went through a lot of training through UT College of Business, started working with a lot of subject matter experts at UT, got a chance to work with some folks that I know you're familiar with some of the folks over at UT, Chuck Moon, and some other folks over there, and just really developed kind of a passion and a real interest in lean, and from there started working on a lot of projects at the hospital and the health system to help them improve quality of care and throughput and different things like that. And so from there, you know, I've also have pursued, I'm a Six Sigma Black Belt through the American Society of Quality, and just continue to develop kind of that. I'm kind of a constant learner around that body of work. So that's a little bit about where that came from.
Yeah, and speaking of Chuck Noon, longtime regular podcast listeners might remember that episode 120 of this podcast was a discussion I had with Chuck Noon and Dr. Jody Crane talking about lean and emergency medicine and some of the work they've done and the book they've written. So, the good people to be learning from, Virginia Mason and others. So, how would you describe, and you've talked about, doing some projects and, I think, it's always important to come back to purpose. And I know this is a very important thing for, the student group, connecting to purpose. When you were either first introduced to lean or doing some of that work, I mean, how did you see that performance improvement work connecting to your own personal purpose, the purpose of people you were working with?
Yeah. Well, I feel like that my purpose kind of at a high level was really to figure out how do we make healthcare better? How do we make it better for employees? How do we make it better for physicians? How do we ultimately make it better for patients? And that kind of theme was what really drove me and woke me up every day. And so I really saw lean as a means to an end. I saw it as an opportunity to really help myself, others, in a larger healthcare system and even the industry do just that. And so that was for me how it really connected to my purpose.
Yeah, and I think, whenever we see great success stories with lean out there, people talk about their purpose and benefits on many levels, not just measurable benefits, but emotional benefits for patients and for staff and financial benefits for the organization. It seems like sometimes organizations get off track when, I don't know if they're trying to shortcut the process and they sort of come out and tell people, hey, you need to go implement this. And like, well,
yeah,
Without connecting it to purpose or even reasons why. What are some of your thoughts or recommendations if an organization is struggling in that way?
Yeah, it's a great conversation because one of the things that I have found over the last probably decade is there's a lot of what I would call very well-intentioned lean practitioners that I'm going to just for lack of vocabulary refer to as kind of head people. And so you've got in healthcare, you've got head people and you've got kind of heart people. And sometimes what happens is that the head people get really excited about lean because of the opportunity to improve metrics and improve performance. But they sometimes forget about this whole other group of people in healthcare that are I refer to as kind of heart people. And you really have to help them connect this work back to the things that are important to them, their values. And it can't just be about, moving a number, but it really has to be about, how does this connect to, worthwhile work, a sense of purpose, making a difference, things that are important to folks like nurses and physicians and really around, how does this help them improve quality of care? And if you can really help, through either stories or through examples or very intentional messaging, help people understand how this does connect back to those things. I have found in my experience that you'll get a lot more traction in your lean journey as opposed to just trying to deploy, a lean system per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a great reminder there that stories are really powerful. It's not just the data and the metrics, but there are some really compelling stories that reach people's hearts. And I think back even a connection to Pascal Dennis, who's an author and a former Toyota manager, and we've done some podcasts together. And Pascal always emphasizes, even coming from that sort of hardcore engineering background, you know, and he worked in HR, so maybe he's both a head and a heart person. But mm-hmm. he said you've got to reach people's hearts and minds at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll come back, you know, we'll talk more about Lean, you know, but I want to talk a little bit about some of your own personal transition into Studer Group, you know, before we talk about some of the synergies or parallels in methodologies. Can you talk about making that career transition and maybe use that as a way to introduce Studer Group, the organization, for listeners who might not know about Studer Group?
Sure. Well, it's a nice segue when you mentioned the topic of storytelling. I can think of not many better storytellers than Quint Studer, the founder of Studer Group. And he just had a real gift for, and still does, for communicating to audiences and really connecting work back to, you know, a sense of purpose. But Studer Group is a healthcare coaching firm based out of Pensacola, Florida. We've been around for about 20 years. And our work is a little bit unique in the sense that we focus a lot on leadership in healthcare. We focus a lot on culture. And we are firm believers in process improvement. But part of our philosophy is that it will struggle if it's just a standalone item by itself. Studer Group has received, you know, accolades such as in 2010, we actually were a recipient of the Malcolm Baldrige Award. For the last 10 years, we have been in the 99th percentile internally for employee engagement. And we also rank among some of the top companies in the world for Net Promoter Score customer loyalty. So we compare with organizations such as USAA, Amazon, Apple, as far as the way that our customers think about us and the service and quality that we provide to them. And so I share all that to say that we would not, you know, achieve all that if we weren't firm believers, you know, in process improvement and things that can help organizations improve. But we really have a strong passion for applying that on top of a leadership framework. And so I found out about Studer Group. I was actually working at UT Medical Center, and I was doing a lot of work as an internal lean practitioner for the organization. And I wound up going to a conference. It was actually an American College of Healthcare Executives conference, and Quint just happened to be one of the sessions. I was not familiar with Quint, but I, you know, heard him speak, and his message, Mark, just really resonated with me because a lot of what he talked about was how, you know, I can remember him saying things like, you know, culture eats process improvement for lunch. And I can remember him saying things like, you know, that it has to be the people or the people. You know, a lot of times I'll hear, you know, really strong lean practitioners talk about it's the, you know, it's the people or the process. And Quint was just really focused on kind of the people part of it. And one of the things he mentioned was how, you know, like with a PI project, or, you know, you might be doing a Kaizen project or some sort of rapid cycle improvement, that even if you had a perfectly designed project, if you had a perfectly designed process, that, you know, you could take a low performing individual and they could actually sabotage that process and make it not work optimally. And then vice versa, a lot of times in healthcare, we don't always recognize that there are process improvement opportunities because we have high performing individuals who are simply figuring out how to work around broken processes. And what struck me about all of that was it was really something that was kind of dear to me because I had seen that. I'd seen that in my own organization about how that a lot of times, no matter how strong of a deployment we would try to do with certain lean principles, that a lot of times they would come up short and we would either, you know, not necessarily get the outcomes we wanted, or they wouldn't stick, or they wouldn't happen as fast as we wanted. And a lot of times it was due to the cultural issues. It was due to the people part of the equation. And so I really came back from that conference and found myself starting to be just a disciple of everything that Studer Group was putting out as far as thought leadership. I was reading a lot of their books. I was, watching a lot of their videos, pulling in a lot of the resources from their website. Then after, a period of time of doing that and even applying and experimenting with some of those things in my own areas of responsibility, I wound up contacting Studer Group and just said, hey, I just love this stuff. I find that it's making such a big difference. And I'd love to see if there's an opportunity for me to come and be part of your team. And that was in the early part of 2012. I came on board with Studer Group in that year and have been part of the team ever since. And wake up every day in just an incredible opportunity to make a difference in healthcare. So that was a big part of how I transitioned.
Yeah, well, it's great that you had that opportunity. And if I remember right, 2012 was probably right about the time, maybe soon after, where you and I crossed paths. We've crossed paths at a couple of Lean Healthcare Transformation Summits, a few Studer Group events.
Yep, yeah, I do recall that. And then I think, you and I have connected. And actually, your book, Lean Hospitals, was one of the first books that I had read when I was actually at UT. That was still to this day, I've got it here earmarked on my desk and use it as kind of a field reference manual every now and then to sharpen up my knowledge around the topics.
Oh, well, thank you. It's quite kind of you to mention that. And, as far as books and, talking about Quint Studer being a great storyteller, one of the books that was very important to me and is sitting here on my bookshelf is Quint's book, Hardwiring Excellence, because when I first got into healthcare in 2005 and I was trying to learn about this environment and I was working with people and they were telling me their stories and experiences, but a number of people recommended, so you've got to read Quint's book. And so finally I took that advice and that book was really compelling and powerful for me, not just of his story, but and reading about his approach and philosophies to me really resonated because I thought there was a lot of connection and overlap to Lean on a number of levels, not just some of the tactics. I think rounding with a purpose is very similar to the idea of what a lot of people would call a Gemba walk of, not going out and just, not just getting out of the office, but going out with some specific questions, some leader standard work, if you will. But then, there's the style in the idea of servant leadership, making sure people have what they need to do a good job. There are parallels to what I hear from Toyota leaders saying, it's a leader's responsibility to create a system in which people can be successful, that they're not having to constantly develop workarounds for, as you mentioned a couple of minutes ago. So, and I think that, so that book was really, really helpful for me to help with my transition into healthcare. And, I revisited that book earlier this year and I think it holds up really well. So, I wanted to ask you though, how do you see, we can discuss this further here. How do you see kind of, classic Lean approaches and Studer Group principles fitting together and being complementary? What are some of the things that stand out to you?
Yeah. And I really think that's a really important question, Mark, because, as a individual that's blessed to work in multiple health systems across the country now, and I get to see, everything from, large academic medical centers to large regional health systems to standalone community hospitals, even, rural critical access hospitals. I find that a lot of organizations are asking this question. And they're asking this question out of good intent because, they're trying to become better. They're trying to fulfill their mission. They're trying to respond to the challenges in the external environment with reductions in reimbursement and really trying to improve quality of care. And so many times, that question is being asked. And I think it's very important and very timely. So thanks for bringing it up today. When I think about Lean, one of the models that I try to go back to try to give some frame of reference is the Shingo model. And a lot of people who have seen, that model are familiar with kind of that pyramid that you see a lot of times that has enterprise-wide alignment. It's got cultural enablers and continuous improvement. And so for a lot of, you know, your audience, I know that those terms will be familiar. And the Studer principles, you know, what we coach when we're working with organizations, the framework that we actually use is called evidence-based leadership. And the evidence-based leadership actually is built into a couple of different pieces. The first one of those is called aligned goals. The second one is called aligned behaviors. And the third one is called aligned processes. And the irony is in my mind, I actually see that they're very complementary and synergistic to the Shingo model. I even coach sometimes that for organizations that are really strong in a lean deployment system or a lean management system, that they can relate the evidence-based leadership model to that in that regards. Because when we talk about aligned goals, you know, a large part of that has to do with that enterprise-wide alignment that you see in the Shingo model. When you talk about aligned behaviors, a large part of that is really similar to the cultural enablers you see in the Shingo model. And then when we talk about aligned processes, a lot of that is similar to what you find in the continuous improvement part of the Shingo model. And so there's definitely a lot of synergy there. And even, you know, you opened up our conversation this morning with AIDIT, which is a communication framework that we coach. And, you know, things like AIDIT, things like rounding, they're actually examples of standard work. The difference is it's standard work of people behaviors and not necessarily processes. And so that creates, you know, some confusion sometimes for people. But it literally is just saying, you know, here is the best way that we know how to communicate at this moment. And it's not meant to be a rigid prescriptive, but a guideline that helps you really follow a best practice model to produce the ultimate value for your customer, which is, you know, a large part of the Shingo principles as well. And so, you know, those are some of the ways. And then when I think about the some of the principles associated with the Shingo model, you know, whether it's lead with humility or respect every individual, you know, create constancy of purpose. You know, those things are just baked into the DNA and the fabric of what we do. And so, you know, when I think about that question, for me, it's not an either or proposition. It's not necessarily, you know, should we do lean or should we do Studer Group? But it's more of a yes and. It's both, because you've got to have the leadership piece and the management, the piece. And I really see a large part of what we do as really addressing a lot of the leadership systems. And I see a lot of what Lean does is really addressing more of the management systems. And I think you need both of those if you're going to have a real culture of high performance.
I agree. And I've seen organizations that, you know, really, really excited, or, you know, they've seen great results from their own combination and synthesis of Studer Group principles and lean. You know, I think I've seen this as, you know, anecdotal as opposed to any sort of, you know, like validated PhD research. But when I've gone into organizations that have a foundation of, you know, a couple of years of working on the culture, the behaviors, the alignment that has come from their Studer Group coaches, I think a lot of ways that sets them up for lean success, that there's a good foundation and fertile soil there. And you know, I agree, it's not either or. It's I think a matter of combining. And I'm trying to verbally draw a Venn diagram. If people can kind of imagine a Venn diagram, I think there's a high degree of overlap. I think, you know, there are some specific concepts and tactics and ideas that are unique contributions from the Studer Group side. And there's probably some things that Lean adds that would be new ideas for an organization that's been embracing Studer Group principles and practices for a long time. So I think there's a lot of overlap. You know, when you were talking about aligned goals, that makes me think of a strategy deployment process within a lean management system. So I agree with you. This is all very highly complementary. What are some of your other thoughts? Have you seen, you know, organizations start with Studer and layer lean on top of it, or vice versa? How do you see some of those connections?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when we're out there. I'd say we typically run into one of three scenarios. We typically have existing student group partners who are multiple years into their what we call student group journey, who are beginning a lean journey, and so they're trying to figure out what that looks like. Or we run into organizations that have been, you know, deploying the lean management system per se for a number of years, and they are trying to figure out how to begin a student group journey without disrupting the work that they've done with lean. And then I think the third group is the organization that just knows that they've got to get better, and they're trying to figure out, you know, like I said, some of them are asking the question of which one should we do. And many times the answer is not necessarily an either or, but maybe a little bit of both. And so, yeah, we definitely do see that. And, I'd love to, if it makes sense this morning, you can share some examples of some organizations that, we see those things working together. Yeah, sure. You know, I think one right this second that comes to my mind is actually there's a common acquaintance of ours, Mr. Skip Stewart, out of the Baptist Memorial Healthcare System in Memphis, Tennessee. So they're a student group partner, have been for a number of years. I serve as the account leader for that health system, and they have a very strong, and what I would refer to as very mature, lean management system. They refer to it as their Baptist management system. Skip helps lead that as kind of their cultural transformation leader in the organization, and just doing a superb job there. And my hat goes off to Skip because of the quality of work that he does and just who he is as an individual. And so, Skip, if you're listening this morning, keep up the great work out there. But I tell you what I've observed about them is they are one of their top executives is Dr. Paul DePriest. And Dr. DePriest, he came from the UK, University of Kentucky organization, spent a lot of time up there and he's just a real student of improvement methodology and management theory and management science, and really have a deep appreciation for him and just his perspective on this question as well. And he really sees our work as being the leadership system, and then the Baptist management system being just that, the improvement system. And in his mind, it's not an either or proposition, but it's both. And so when we started with them, a large part of what I did was really try to figure out how do we not come in and disrupt any of their lean work, but figure out how do we align the evidence-based leadership system to the work that's already being happening there, because it's good work. And so for a lot of our tools and tactics that we coach, we're able to tailor those and incorporate some of the things that they are doing with their Baptist management system. And so there's no need for duplication and redundancy. And if there's something that we coach that need is being fulfilled through some aspect of their Baptist management system, then we, either delay or sunset the need to even implement that. And so I try to communicate regularly with Skip around some of those things just to make sure that our work is aligned, and we find that it works well. And so I think some of the big benefits of having both for that organization is they do have the opportunity to ensure goal alignment for the 20 plus hospitals in their healthcare system across multiple states. The leaders' goals are aligned to that. And as they are deploying their Baptist management system, they have the opportunity to make sure that that system is also supportive of those goals. And so the leaders all have the opportunity to have monthly conversations with their 1UP about how those goals are trending. And part of that conversation is them discussing, work they're doing on A3s, CADA work, huddle boards, different things like that. And so there is a lot of synergy there. And then I think another aspect of it is as we are deploying some of our more commonly known bedside tools and tactics, so things like some of their rounding behaviors, they will use their Baptist management system to help them overcome barriers. And so instead of approaching a rounding behavior and saying, should we do this? They'll approach it and say, we know that this is an evidence-based best practice. And so if we are coming up against barriers or hurdles that are preventing us from, you know, quote unquote, hardwiring this behavior or this tactic, how can we use our Baptist management system to continuously improve our ability to implement this and make sure that it's sustained? And so, so it's a little bit of both. It's our leadership system helps support their work, and their work helps make sure that our leadership system gets improved and gets implemented. So it's a nice complement out there. And that's a good example that I think is just working really well out in the industry today.
Yeah. And I've had the chance to meet Skip just in the past year or two. I need to get Skip on the podcast soon. He's sharing a lot of great content and videos through LinkedIn. I would encourage people go find Skip Stewart on LinkedIn and follow him or connect with him. There's a lot of great work they're doing. Brandon Brown, who's doing some great Toyota Kata coaching work with them. It's great to see the synthesis of different improvement methodologies and leadership approaches. So do you have maybe one other question? Just, if you have advice for organizations about how to avoid confusion when leadership intends, hey, we are combining and synthesizing methods. Staff in the past maybe have been used to, a program of the month, program of the year approach. And so let's say, lean is starting to stick and the organization's really committed to it. And now they say, we're going to combine Studer practices. How do you help avoid an impression where people say, they're moving on from lean, or this is the new thing and as a replacement? What advice would you have for leaders about that?
Yeah, I think three tips I'll offer. Number one is, I think words matter, name and language matters. And I think one of the things that we have found is we spend a lot of time at the early part of our partnerships with healthcare systems really talking about, what are we going to call this work? And we find that that's important because one of the first things we want to be sunset in our partnership is any kind of reference back to us. So for instance, at Baptist, they use a phrase there called Baptist Cares, and that really refers to as the body of work that that we help them with. And other organizations that we partner with, you'll find very little reference to Studer Group. And the reason for that is we know that if an individual in the organization is referring to our work or lean work as just that, if they're saying, this is my lean work or this is my Studer Group work, then there's a psychological thing that happens there that they have less ownership of it. Whereas if there's some sort of name or brand that really connects back to that organization that's meaningful and really resonates with that audience, there's a much better opportunity for that to stick. And so in a lot of organizations, if they are trying to do both lean and Studer Group, we would actually encourage them to come up with a single name or brand that both of those bodies of work could actually fall under, so that it doesn't feel like that, today I've got to work on my Studer Group stuff and tomorrow I've got to work on my lean stuff. But it's really, no, this is our body of work that's helping us transform our organization. And so it's not an either or, proposition, but it's really both. And so the first tip would be making sure that you pay attention to what are we referring to this work as, what's our common language is helping define our culture around this work. The second thing is we find that a lot of leaders and organizations really need skill building when it comes to just change management in general, and really understanding that there are phases of change that are highly predictable and very much understood in the literature as far as both change for the organization and change for the individual. And the way that I like to teach this when I'm working with organizations is I like to talk about how is this work going to feel to both you as an organization and to you as a person. And it's going to feel differently maybe in the first 90 days than it does in the first year. And it may feel differently in 2 years from now than it does in the first year. And we talk about how you need to be aware that those feelings and thoughts around this body of work are going to change and shift over time. And that's very predictable. And so what do you need to do to make sure you're managing successfully through those different seasons and addressing the issues during each one of those seasons effectively so that you can move on to the next season? And so change management skill building, I think, has to be a big part of both of these topics, whether an organization is, you know, what I refer to as a purist with Lean, or if they're a purist with Studer Group, or if they are working more of a blended hybrid, as most organizations are doing now, they still need to be very strong with change management. And then I think that the last tip, Mark, is making sure that there is a strong leadership accountability system in place. We find that, you know, even with our work, even with Lean, you know, I'll talk about our work first. A lot of times what we find when we start partnering with organizations officially is they're already familiar with most of our tactics. It's not like we walk into most organizations and they have a lack of familiarity with what we coach, what we teach. I mean, we have, you know, dozens of books. We have free material on our website. There's conferences that we have. A lot of people have heard our speakers. So a lot of what we do is what I refer to as common knowledge in the industry. What I'll say is that kind of the secret sauce of making it stick is we help them put in place an accountability system when we start working with them that makes sure that it's not just a flavor of the month, but it does stick. Because, you know, my friend and colleague Craig Dio, he talks a lot about how, you know, it's not hard to improve, but it's hard to sustain. And he talks about the example of how, you know, people will, anybody listening to this podcast has probably at some point lost a few pounds throughout the year. And so losing weight is not hard, but sustaining that weight loss is what's hard. And he'll use that example to really drive home that point. And so the accountability system is what sustains that work. And I'll say similarly with Lean, you know, let's just use an example and say that, you know, an organization decides that they're going to start using A3s to really have a consistent problem-solving methodology in the organization for all leaders and individuals. Well, that's a fantastic idea, but it's not reality to think that just every person in the organization is going to want to do that, even if you connect that to purpose, even if you you know, decide that it's what's best for patients. There's going to be a small cross-section of folks that don't do that just because you want them to. And so there has to be some accountability, even around Lean work, to make sure that it's done, that it's done well, and done consistently and isn't just a flavor of the month. So the leadership accountability system is really the third tip there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's great advice. I mean, I see organizations, whether it's the Baptist Management System, the Virginia Mason Production System, even though I don't know if the word production resonates with people, but the point is that sure. It's Virginia Mason's and it's a system, the Michigan Quality System, the Theta Care Improvement System. I think phrases like that are meaningful because then that, I think in one way that becomes a banner in which you can fold in other approaches, high reliability organization methodologies. I know Studer Group you know, sees high degree of overlap there. I've talked with others on the podcast about the overlap between Lean and HRO methods. And, you know, we can, you know, I think use a banner like that in a lot of helpful ways. And I appreciate the other points you made there, too, about, you know, change management as a process, leadership accountability. Those are things maybe we could dive into in a future podcast. But maybe one other question, you know, I want to ask before we wrap up here. You mentioned, you know, the challenges today. I mean, you know, what are some final thoughts you have? You know, advice for healthcare leaders or executives who look and say, oh, there's so much uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen with repeal or change of the Affordable Care Act. There's mergers happening in so many different directions across the industry. There's a lot of change, a lot of uncertainty. What are some of the best ways to try to navigate that environment?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I think, you know, I think the big thing is make sure that you have a strong focus on reconnecting your people, yourself to purpose. You hit on this earlier. And, you know, I was just at an organization yesterday, Mark, who they just went through a epic go live over the last, 30 days. And the tone in the organization was just one of fatigue. It was one of just, I hate to use the overused word of burnout, but I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, that's what I felt. I felt it. I saw it. And, you know, people are just tired. And you've got amazing human beings who have committed their life to providing, you know, quality care to the community and patients. And they're just, you know, really being taxed hard. And so I think the first thing is there's got to be an increased level of connecting this work to purpose to make sure that we are, you know, reconnecting and engaging our stakeholders, whether that's physicians, whether it's nurses, whether it's essential services. But the people that do this work have to be constantly reminded, and they need to remind themselves of why this work matters. It's more than just a job. It really is a calling for many individuals, and it makes a big difference in the world. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is a relentless focus on your culture. You know, in the today's world, there's not just a competition for reimbursement dollars, but there's competition for manpower and labor. And I think the more that people can focus on being just an amazing place to work, then they're going to attract the top talent to their organization. If they can focus on being the best place for providers to practice, then they're going to have a better chance of recruiting, the top talent when it comes to that. And if they can focus on being just the absolute best place to receive care, create amazing experiences for their patients, then they're going to create more loyalty and market share during these challenging times. And so, I'm a huge fan and disciple of everything that we've been talking about. But those two things, just a connection to purpose and a relentless focus on culture, in my opinion, have to be on the front of minds for leaders in today's world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, focusing on, part of what I hear you saying is that in times where there are a lot of things spiraling outside of an organization's control, the things you pointed to of focusing on culture, being an amazing place to work, are things that organizations do have a lot of influence over, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. And so actually, that just that is what are those things that we have the most control and influence over? And let's do those things well. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, it's a great point. Great advice to end on. So I want to go ahead and wrap up here. But Clay, it's been great having the chance to hear your thoughts about your work, your career, Studer Group, and Lean. If people want to learn more, they can, of course, go to studergroup.com. Lots of resources there, lots of great information there. And if people want to connect with you, if they've got specific questions, how would you recommend people do that, Clay?
Sure. The easiest way would just be to shoot me a quick email. It's clay.linkous, that's LINKOUS, at studergroup.com. And I'd love to connect with you if you have an opportunity to ask me a question or share some feedback from today.
Okay. Well, thanks. I hope people do that. And I want to thank you for being here and thank everyone for listening. Take care. And I hope we cross paths real soon, Clay.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for all the great work you're doing out there to really make a difference in healthcare also.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For Lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, podcast listeners. I'm excited to announce the release of the audiobook version of my new book, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. Listen and dive into powerful insights on fostering growth through mistakes. Whether you're a leader, entrepreneur, or just trying to get better at learning from mistakes, this audiobook is for you. Get it now on Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. Visit mistakesbook.com for more info.